Facts on Sports with Faxon Childress and John Hite.
Rattler awaits a shotgun snap, gets it. Blitz coming, pressure coming. Barrett Carter getting it and sacking Rattler.
They do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining.
He could have easily gotten 5 or 6 yards if he would have just pulled that thing down and dove forward.
But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
Oh, what a play by Mike Williams. A touchdown of 19 yards. I mean, he put Jamarcus King on his back and gave that chicken a ride.
Free throw shooter.
Clark in a straight jack.
Oh, he didn't need to do that. He threw it away. King Pickens.
To the sideline, caught. First down.
Woo! What a hit! Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there? And you didn't invite me? Hurt my feelings!
Well, there's Chase Hunter. 2 seconds, one. Launches a three. Good if it goes! It does! Chase Hunter, the three! At the buzzer, sends Clemson into the locker room. Up 10, 35, 25!
A double pumper. Comes a double pump shot.
That was another one from the band down by the river.
Now, let's go live to Faxon Childress and John Hite.
We welcome you in, everybody. It's the Tuesday edition of Faxon Sports with Faxon Childress and John Hite right here on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. Tuesday, October 7th, 2025. We are glad to have you with us. 654 Roar if you'd like to check in. On the phone lines or the Adams Co. Roofing text line, both will be open throughout the course of the first 2 hours of today's show. We remind you, the head ball coach takes priority around here on Tuesdays. 11 o'clock hour, as always, on Tuesdays, we'll be carrying Dabo Swinney's weekly press conference. He'll be recapping the win against North Carolina, shifting gears to preview mode against the Boston College Eagles up in Chestnut Hill this upcoming Saturday. Really excited to hear from Dabo, and a good opportunity for Clemson to continue to establish some momentum, right? I was listening to the end to Mickey Blyler's show. He was talking about how you're playing North Carolina twice in a row. I don't know if BC's as bad as North Carolina, but when you get beat 48-7, I definitely get where Mickey's coming from on that by Pittsburgh this past week, which is what happened to the Eagles. And Mickey's overarching theme about, you know, Clemson needing to win this game and win this game in a lopsided fashion, I wholeheartedly agree with that sentiment. Listening to Tiger Calls last night with Dabo, I saw a couple quotes kind of popped off on Twitter, one of which was that Boston College was four plays away from being 4-1, and I know that the fan base hates that quote. For what it's worth, I don't think that that's that far away from the truth when related to this Boston College team. When you go back, they led that entire game against California. They were in a crazy double OT shootout against Michigan State. They fumbled on the 1 yard line against Stanford. Stanford ended up taking that back halfway up the field, getting field position and scoring. So, like, I get where people get frustrated with coach to an extent, but in this case, I do think he's right. This Boston College team has played multiple very competitive and tight football games down the stretch, including that California game in which they led for like 58 minutes. So I don't think BC's planning to roll over and die, especially in as early as a fashion as North Carolina did up in Chapel Hill. But this is still a team where Clemson needs to take care of business. So excited to hear from Coach Sweeney and excited to get into the program today. John, hope you had as much fun as I did last night watching the Trevor Lawrence show, man. What a performance by the former Clemson QB. And on that note, we'll bring you in. How was your Monday night?
Monday night was very good. How about yours?
It was great. It was great. Anytime you get to see Trevor and Travis have success like that, a 14-point come-from-behind victory against the Kansas City Chiefs, and we all hate the Chiefs, right? I feel like that's just kind of a common opinion. That was great.
I actually don't hate them. But
really?
Yeah. I don't like them. I don't openly pull for them, but I do appreciate greatness in the sport. Now, they're not great this season by any means, but you know, the run of Mahomes and Reed and all of that, like I've grown to appreciate what they are. Now, like I said, that's not a team that I openly root for, and you know, I don't have the chance figured out, and they're not must-see TV for me, but like I very much dislike the Patriots of the early to mid 2000s much more than I dislike this Chiefs team.
I think that's fair. I'm not in that.
Granted, but my team doesn't play them in the playoffs, and then we already get eliminated by the time the Chiefs are done with their bye, so I haven't really been all that impacted by it.
I was going to say, I haven't reached the maturation stage of the appreciation of greatness yet, because we fired their head coach, and he turned around and won 3 Super Bowls for another team, and then they beat us in a Super Bowl. So I haven't given that up yet. I'm still mad about 2022. Give me like 2 more years, and I think I'll be able to take a step back and appreciate the Chiefs a little bit more. For now, I'm still riding the hate train, and I still am not a fan. So last night, 654 Roar, if you guys want to get in. I know everybody was watching, and I know everybody was tuned in. I saw Twitter was absolutely blowing up. Everybody watches Monday Night Football, and it was great. Man, Texter gets in and says, should have been a 17-point win. The Stripes tried everything they could do to keep that close. Yeah, the officiating was bad, but it ended up not preventing Jacksonville from getting a win. 31-28, Jags over Chiefs. Liam Cohen improves to 4-1, really should be 5-0 in his first year as a head coach down in Jacksonville. I think the Jaguars are the odds-on favorite as of right now in this division. I mean, them and the Indianapolis Colts have been two of the most impressive teams in football. Last night's win over Kansas City vaulted Jacksonville into being the odds-on favorite. Them in Indianapolis, again, it's like minus 105 and plus 105 right now. So it's a 50-50 shot as to who's going to win this division. But Trevor Lawrence, this is a signature win that he really needed, and he needed it in a desperate fashion, in my opinion. This is a big year for Trevor, as we kind of alluded to when previewing this NFL season, when previewing this Jaguars team throughout the course of the offseason. And a big part of why Trevor Lawrence has gotten maybe a bad or unfair rap thus far is it feels like these big primetime games, they always come up just short. Whether it be playoff games. I know he had the crazy comeback against Los Angeles, but outside of that, you know, they've never necessarily been able to get over the hump or get to a conference championship game. These primetime moments where it feels like everybody's watching, he usually has had an interception in store for us. And he did throw a pick last night, but man, he was electric down the stretch. The game-winning drive, he was absolutely surgical. And I don't know, man. Last night felt like a really big deal for the Jaguars, for their future and trajectory of their franchise. I know it's a Week 5 game, but to beat a team like Kansas City, even if they're quote-unquote down in comparison to normal, that's a pretty big deal and a step in the right direction for this Jaguars group. So I thought last night was a big deal for Cohen. I thought last night was a big deal for Trevor. For a first-year head coach to beat Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and the Kansas City Chiefs in a game they put up 28 points on offense, that's a really, really impressive feat that does not deserve to be discounted, John. So I was really happy for Trevor and really happy for Liam Cohen last night.
Chris Jones is going to have a very bad day when he gets home and has to watch the tape with his coaching staff. That last goal line run by Trevor Lawrence should not have occurred. We always talk about why can't Cade Klubnik do things like Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence on that run there, if he would have gotten in touch, looked very much like Cade Klubnik at times. But Chris Jones just stands there. He stands there. Arguably the best defensive lineman in football stands and watches the entirety of that play unfold.
Yeah.
Shocking to see. I think the big reason why Jacksonville was able to persevere and win this game, I mean, yes, the adjustments made at halftime were very important, but go look at Brian Thomas Jr., 4 catches on 6 targets. Travis Hunter, 3 catches on 3 targets. Like, you had guys catch the football when it was thrown to them. You didn't have a ridiculous amount of drops with this offense. I think that's a big reason why you were able to find success for Jacksonville last night offensively.
Yeah, and you know, with Travis Hunter specifically, talk about one of the biggest moments of the game, that 44-yard grab where he's able to go up over multiple bodies, haul in a contested catch, thought he was phenomenal. And again, they're still trying to figure out his role and his workload as to what is the ideal balance for Travis Hunter. How many snaps do you want him playing on offense? Where do you want him playing on offense? What's the script going to look like? How many targets are you trying to build into your game plan for him per game? And then on the inverse, how many snaps you want him playing defensively so he still has some juice to go on offense? There's a lot of different things to account for with Travis Hunter, and it's a coaching staff that's never been tasked with doing this at any stage in their football career. So a lot of people are like jumping ship on Travis Hunter or saying that they overpaid or all of these things and these narratives that are flying around. My rebuttal to that would be, we're 5 games into a 22-year-old player's career, and he's a rookie, and he's a player that brings a skill set to the table that we have not seen in this league in a very long time. There's going to be an adjustment period, and there's going to be a learning curve. Stick with the process. You didn't take this guy to completely punt on him 5 games into his career just because he's not playing as much as everybody anticipated.
How many people are are out here actually complaining about Travis Hunter that are fantasy football people.
I think that that is more a fantasy narrative than anything. Yeah. But Jaguars, I don't know. Jaguars fans seem to, that seems to be the only part of the whole Liam Cohen experience thus far that they're displeased with. But again, I think that they need to, you know, exhibit some more patience in related to that. Like, if we get through year one and Travis Hunter is the wide receiver two / wide receiver three on a team that wins their division and makes the playoffs while playing defensive snaps, that's a success. Like, that's what you drafted him for. You drafted him to be a focal point on your team, whether that be on offense, whether that be on defense. He's going to be a face of the franchise going forward. And I just think that people are jumping ship on him a little bit too soon. So, I don't know. Texter gets in. Seems like they're targeting Jones with every QB run. Every time Trav scrambled, Jones just couldn't get to him. Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and watch the tape, but it did feel like that in real time. I will say that. It did feel like they were picking on him a little bit. Chris Jones had a rough year thus far for his standard. Another Texter gets in and says, the AFC South, the strongest division in the NFL. Jags, Colts, Texans, who are better than their record, just ask the Ravens. No. They're not the best division in the NFL, but they're a lot better than I anticipated them to be. I would say that I still think it's the NFC North. I still think with Detroit winning 15 games last year and the way that they've been able to sustain some of that success this year with their lines of scrimmage play looking really good, with Green Bay adding on defense and looking like a legit contender, with the Vikings having their whole team dead and still getting into the bye week 3-2, that and then the Bears aren't bad either. The Bears are actually a pretty decent little team. That's probably still the best division in football, but the AFC South is definitely better than anticipated, and I'm definitely willing to concede that. Another texter gets in and says their offense will figure it out. The defense appears to be elite. Just don't let Shane Waldron call plays. Amen to that, brother. Amen to that. Another texter gets in about Trevor. Said his fundamentals look very good. The new coach has helped him. Yeah, I also think, like, a big part of this, and it wasn't necessarily showcased last night because the game script was kind of weird, and then they fumbled on the one, and the Chiefs held the ball for the majority of the game. Jacksonville came into last night's game with the best rushing attack in the NFL to date. I don't know if that's still the numbers, but they're in the top three as far as this morning goes. And a lot of that is Travis Etienne, but a lot of that is also Liam Cohen and the way that he was able to transform that unit last year in Tampa Bay. So for the first time in his career, Trevor Lawrence actually has a run game that's consistent to rely on. And that's started to open up a lot more avenues for them to take some shots down the field in the passing game, which is kind of where you saw Brian Thomas Jr. have some success last night. And he wasn't perfect, but he made the plays when he needed to make the plays, and that's ultimately what it's about. Let's get Mike from Greenville in here in the first segment. 654 Roar is the number. Mike, good to hear from you. How we doing?
Oh, man, I'm great after a big win last night.
Man, that's big time.
This team can go a long way. Defensively, they're playing lights out. Brother Lord is playing out of his mind. This new system is really helping him out. But as a original Jags fan, the one thing that's bothered me with this team is the play calling. I don't know if the play calling is coming in too late or Trevor is taking too long with the pre-snap look on defense. The play clock is running down almost one every single play. That has to be fixed because twice we had delay games. We can't have that. You know, that's mental mistake. That's a football stuff. We can't have that. If we can get the passing game, get the clicking, this is going to be a dangerous team.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you in the slightest. I think Jacksonville is just kind of scratching the surface of what they can become. And to be honest with you, they're ahead of schedule in comparison to what I thought they were going to be this year. I thought that this was going to be a Jags team that was sitting around 9-8, 10-7, maybe had a chance to backdoor into the playoffs, and maybe had a chance to win their division. They appear that they're ahead of schedule, and they're better than that. And Mike, if Brian Thomas Jr. caught that ball in Cincinnati on fourth down, then you're looking at a 5-0 football team right now. Yeah, so this is a really good football team, and they've got a lot of versatility on both sides of the ball with what they can kind of do, and I think the defense is really like the calling card. You talk about Devin Lloyd, well, Alukun is also playing really good ball, Wingard's playing good ball, Murray's playing good ball. Like, they've just got a defensive ability to fly to the football and swarm the football, and all those guys play hard, so it's been really encouraging to see this group just kind of continue to gel, and it feels like Liam Cohen's the man with the plan right now.
Yeah, he is. And going back to what you said, if you ask anybody who looked at the Jags schedule at the beginning of the year at this point, they would have said we've been 1-4. they only went over the Panthers. We would have lost to the Texans. We would have lost to the 49ers. We would have lost to the Chiefs. This team is ahead of schedule, and I said early on in the year this will be a double-digit win team.
Yeah.
You know, and it is on pace to be that. But it's still early. It's a long season. I'm going to take it one game at a time. We got to get ready for a tough Seattle team coming up Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's a short week, and we got some people. And it's going to be a tough game.
For sure. Hey, Mike, appreciate the phone call. We got to take a quick break, but thanks for calling in, brother.
No problem.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of the points Mike is making, and I think that's kind of the main term I have right now for Jacksonville is ahead of schedule, right? And, you know, a lot of people, Texter gets in about the Travis Hunter thing, saying people complain they rush quarterbacks too soon. Why would Travis Hunter be any different? Skill position versus quarterback is, it's a different evaluation. It's a different timeline. I don't think they're rushing Travis. I think they're just trying to figure it out. Like, if you want me to be honest with you, I don't think the coaching staff knows what to do with him. And I think that this might have been more of an organizationally driven move in the NFL draft than it was just a coaching staff type of move, especially with the way that Gladstone was kind of raving about Travis Hunter after they drafted him. So we'll unpack a little bit more of this on the other side of a quick break. That Seahawks game next week is going to be very tough for Jacksonville. Going to be a motivated group to play good football after taking that rough loss to Tampa Bay this past weekend. Quick break with Faxon and John. More on the other side.
When reliability matters, trust American Doormasters to keep your business running smoothly. Is your garage door opener broken? We specialize in diagnosing and fixing issues quickly and professionally, all at a great price. From broken springs to complete installations, our expert team has the upstate of South Carolina covered. Don't let a faulty door disrupt your operations. Call today 864-990-3075. American Doormasters for all your garage door needs and experience top-notch service.
Ready to ditch a workout that involves just lifting heavy things? Or running on a treadmill in front of yet another screen in your life? Come climb some walls at Blockhaven, Greenville's bouldering gym, where strength and flexibility meet problem solving and community. No ropes, no harnesses, just giant padded floors, 16-foot walls, and hype music. Blockhaven has over 200 rotating routes for beginners to Olympic climbers. Visit Blockhaven at the Judson Mill District in Greenville or online at blochaven.com.
It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and Swamp Fox Distilling in Pendleton is partnered with The Roar, and we're raising money for Tigers for Tatas. Throughout the entire month of October, they're donating 50% of their sales of orange and vanilla all-in rum and all-pink merchandise. They also have raffle baskets that include rum bottles signed by Head Coach Dabo Sweeney and others. Visit Swamp Fox Distilling, located at 128 Exchange Street, downtown Pendleton on the Square. Open Thursday through Saturday from 2 to 7 p.m.
Cigars, cigars, cigars. Tobacco Plus in Greer is home to South Carolina's largest humidor, featuring the finest selection of premium hand-rolled cigars in the state, and at the very best prices, too. And select a smooth, delicious Monte Cristo, Rocky Patel or Cohiba, and relax on your golf outing. Swing by Tobacco Plus in Greer, South Carolina's number one cigar store, located at Exit 60 off Interstate 85. Also serving Georgia and North Carolina with nationwide shipping.
We all know and love Eggs Up Grill, but did you know they cater? From brunchy buffets to breakfast samplers, wraps, sandwiches, and salads, Eggs Up Grill has the best catering options in town. Are you a business owner or office manager looking to elevate your next meeting or party? How about a coach looking for your next team meal or box lunches? Visit Eggs Up Grill of Clemson, Seneca, or Greenwood. Ordering couldn't be easier for pickup and delivery through Easy Cater. Just visit eggsupgrill.com and click on the catering button. That's eggsupgrill.com.
Parenting is hard. It's even harder if your child tells you they're in trouble with the law. What should you do next? Nick Lavery, Clemson's local attorney, is here to help. Nick and his legal team know the best options to help defend and protect your child and their future. Whether it's a DUI, minor in possession, public disorderly conduct, or a fake ID, Nick Lavery is here to help you and your child. For your free consultation, call 864-654-3680.
The South Carolina Education Lottery definitely allowed me to really find myself, to get an education, and then use it as a springboard in really launching my career. That's what the Life Scholarship did for me.
Knowing that I can go to where I want to go to, study what I want to study, having the Life Scholarship made that possible for me.
The South Carolina Education Lottery. A better you, a better us, a better South Carolina. Visit sceducationlottery.com/better you.
Is your crawl space damp or musty?
Water in your crawl space can cause wood to rot and create an environment for mold and mildew that can make its way inside your home. Canty Foundation Specialist specializes in crawl space repair. Call us today for your free inspection so you can have the peace of mind knowing your crawl space is dry and your home is protected. Call today, 864-641-0176, or visit cantycanfixit.com.
Join Out of Bounds Wednesday, October 8th from noon to 3 as Kwok and Ben broadcast live from ACD Sports in Easley on behalf of Tigers for Tatas. Join Out of Bounds and shop for your favorite Tiger apparel and gifts. Support a great cause and grab a slice of pizza. October 8th, ACD Sports, Easley.
Powered by Upcountry Fiber, we are 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Providing fiber internet, HDTV, and phone service, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
Sports talk for people who love sports. Come on, there's no need to complicate things.
It can't be forced. It should just come about effortlessly.
We are The Roar, where every day is game day.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Hite continues here on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to check in. We're talking a little Jacksonville Jaguars football here on the program. The Clemson boys got it done last night in Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. 31-28 win over the Kansas City Chiefs to improve to 4-1. 3-0 at home, so they're defending Duval County. And again, I said when Liam Cohen got hired that I thought they hit it out of the park. Said the same thing about Gladstone, and a lot of people were hyper-fixating on Cohen being a little bit of a quirky dude that, like, stuttered in his press conference and had a really weird way of saying the slogan. Nick Sirianni had the worst opening press conference in the history of the National Football League and ended up winning the Super Bowl. Like, that stuff doesn't matter as much as you think when it comes to the NFL. If the guy can coach, I don't care what they look like to the media, just personally, especially when they're dealing with pro athletes. If they've got the respect of the locker room, they can manage the egos, and they can coach, that's the big three to check the boxes. They can be the worst person ever in front of a microphone as far as I care, John. If you're 4-1 in Jacksonville, you can say whatever you want to the media as far as I'm concerned if you're Liam Cohen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For what media will be available to you in Jacksonville, yeah, you should say whatever you want.
Exactly. Let's get Quez and Clemson in here. 654 Roar is the number. Quez, we always appreciate the phone call. How we doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Just want to call in and talk about the game real quick. Really love what I saw last night. The receivers, they caught, you know, they pretty much caught everything that came their way. And, like, I remember, like, a lot of people – they were getting in about Brian Thomas and, like, how he was dropping balls, you know, which was deserved because, you know, like, the first 3 weeks, like, his hands were just non-existent. But this game, like, he had it. Like, he had them on him today. Well, not today, but yesterday. And then, like, that ball on 3rd and 7 from Trevor.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Like, that's a freaking dot if I ever saw one. Like, he just sat there and he just said, screw it. I'm going to let it rip. Brian Thomas is down there somewhere. I'm going to put it there and I'm going to let him make a play. And he made it. And then threw another one to De'Ami Brown right after that. Like, it was just a great game. Like, as far as Travis Hunter, and I'll take you guys' comments off the air. I kind of like how they lined him up kind of like in the two-back set. Like, one of the plays was they motioned him out to the left, and then they brought Etienne on, like, the screen, and Trevor faked it to his side but threw it to Etienne, which ended up being a loss. But I kind of feel like if he would have thrown it to Travis Hunter, that probably could have went for, like, 5-plus yards. I mean, I feel like that's something, like, they could go to more. Maybe, like, put him in the slot a little bit, you know, kind of, like, put him in motion.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just, you know, kind of want to get you guys' thoughts. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for calling in, Quez. You're more than welcome anytime here on the program, 654 Roar. First things first on Trevor, I think that drive, the last drive specifically, is why I personally hold Trevor Lawrence to such a high standard, and it probably sounds like I'm being critical at times. I know how good this guy is. We all know how good this guy is. We saw it for our team for 3 years in person every week, and it was unbelievable, right? And you know, we've seen glimpses of Trevor Lawrence being a fringe elite quarterback at the NFL level throughout the course of his career. The word for Trevor that's gotten in his way, and again, I don't think all of this is his fault. I think he got a crap situation, and then the play calling duties got handed over to Press Taylor under Doug Peterson, and everything hit the fan from there. Consistency. I need to see consistency from Trevor Lawrence. We know he can make all the throws. We know he's one of the more underrated runners of the football in the National Football League at the quarterback position. We know Trevor's got that arm talent to layer the football, to drive the football, whatever it may be. He needs to be more consistent. And last night, I feel like it can be a turning point in his career for Trevor Lawrence. Like, I think last night is a much bigger deal than some people are making it. I understand it's a Week 5 game and that we're all laughing at Trevor for tripping on the guard and getting up and scoring in kind of an unorthodox fashion. But as far as signature wins go, that's one of the biggest wins of Trevor Lawrence's entire career, in my opinion. And I think to do it under a first-year head coach, to do it on primetime, standalone Monday Night Football against a team that's the defending AFC champions, it's been to the Super Bowl 5 of the last 6 years as the AFC representative, that can be a monkey-off-the-back type of thing for Trevor Lawrence, and they can take that momentum and forge forward. Now, on the Travis Hunter topic, I think that they need to continue to be creative with the way they get him incorporated. I'd like to see maybe some more screen passes. I think Travis's best attribute as a wide receiver is yard after the catch ability, which makes me think that, like, maybe you don't need to be lining him up on the outside as much. Maybe he needs to be more of a slot and gadget and screen guy that you're getting the ball 4 or 5 times to a game, and you just take things from there and see if he can continue to develop.
I think 4 to 5 targets is the right number right now. I liked a lot of what Quez said when he was talking about how they ran him in motion to get the defense all looking one way and they throw it completely opposite of him. Like, that's what I'm using Travis Hunter for more so right now than anything. It's because, you know, I mean, the whole country knows who he is. There's not a football player, fan, coach out there who does not know who Travis Hunter is. So the second he comes on the field, everyone has to go, oh, there's 12. I'm using that to my advantage. You have Brian Thomas. You have Brenton Strange, Parker Washington, De'Ami Brown. You've got two very good running backs. I'm using so much of that as just window dressing and camouflage and disguising, and I'm just trying to make a defense pause for a half second to have to think about where he is on any given play. I'm running him in motion all the time. I'm using him. You know, we talk about you use motion to try to decipher are they in man or in zone coverage. I'm using him in motion almost every time because he's really going to tip a defense's hand.
He's going to get eyeballs on him.
Right, and everyone's going to overcorrect and overplay their hand to make sure that he's accounted for. I'm going to use that to my advantage, and I think Liam Cohen is the right type of coach in which to do that. But for anyone out here who thinks that he needs to have more targets than Brian Thomas, I'm sorry, I'm just not there yet. Like, I think it is still an experiment. It is still something that is growing. But I think right now he does not need to be the focal point of the offense.
Right now, Travis Hunter's sitting at 16 grabs on 24 targets. Average yard per catch right now is at 11.4 and is yet to get in the end zone in his NFL career. He did have the longest catch of his career last night with that 44-yard bomb. It was a very impressive catch. But yes, I tend to agree with John. Like, I think this is a situation with Travis, again, these coaches are learning too. And this is a first-time head coach. You're giving a rookie head coach a player that possesses a skill set that we have not seen, that he was not prepared to coach, right? There's no real way to prepare for something until you're living in the moment when it comes to something like this. So I do think that, like, with the Travis Hunter growing and developing, we also need to realize that Liam Cohen's doing this for the first time too, and he's a first-time head coach, and he's still learning and growing into his role and getting comfortable in his own skin as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I'm more than willing to give some grace, some lenience with the timeline here for Travis Hunter and his increased incorporation in this offense down in Jacksonville, but I do understand where some of the Jaguars fans are coming from because he's the number two pick. Again, I would say just exhibit some patience. I think you're going to see him more and more incorporated as his career progresses, and right now they're just trying to figure out what to do with the guy. I like the idea of using him a lot in motion, too. He's a guy that could be a very, very effective decoy and could really free up a guy like the tight end, right? I know he got hurt last night, but a guy like Brenton Strange isn't going to command a ton of attention. You're just going to throw your backer or you're going to throw your nickel on him, and you're going to let that guy go one-on-one. Well, if you're using Travis Hunter and you're motioning him across the face of the defense and shifting that formation, identifying the coverage, as you alluded to, John, pre-snap, then all of a sudden sudden, that's going to free up a lot of different avenues for other guys to eat in their matchups, too. So I almost think using 12 as a decoy right now is probably the best way to deploy him with his skill set.
Absolutely. Have you taken a look, and it's very early, we only have five games. If the season ended today, what the AFC playoff picture would look like?
Yeah, it's drunk. It's absolutely drunk. The Chiefs would be out of the playoffs, correct, unless I'm mistaken?
The Chiefs and the Ravens are both very far out of the playoffs, including the Bengals and the Texans as well. This would be your 1-7. We'll do this quickly. It's October 7th. We don't have to spend a lot of time on what the playoff would be today. Your AFC South and number one overall seed in the AFC would be the Indianapolis Colts.
Sure.
Your 2 seed and winner of the East would be the Bills. The 3 seed and the winner of the North would be the Steelers. The 4 seed, the winner of the West, would be the Chargers. And then your 3 wild card teams, as we all predicted in the preseason, would be the Jaguars, Broncos, and Patriots.
Awesome. Yeah, that's totally. And then just down in the cellar is the Ravens at 1-4, tied for second to last in the AFC, as we all predicted.
Correct. And if the Jets didn't exist, they would be in last place.
Yes, indeed. Chad the mailman gets in and says, I appreciate facts confirming that Chicago should make the playoffs simply due to strength of schedule. Sankey agrees.
Well, I don't know that yet. We don't know how strength of schedule is going to unfold. I don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet.
We don't know. We need to see how strength of schedule really favors the SEC this year before we really can apply it elsewhere.
I'm going to need another paycheck to push more Bears propaganda. So like the league office is going to have to come down with the quota there if you want me to spread more metrics. We're not showing too much love to the Chicago Bears on the
program. Why would you?
No, absolutely.
What have they
not.
Done? It's a 500 football team.
No reason to.
Who have zero division wins.
Nothing impressive accomplished yet in Chicago, but no. You're getting there. You beat the Raiders. Congrats, I guess.
Cute little start to the season.
For sure. All right, on the note of the NFL, since we're on the topic, we do have more games to talk about this past weekend outside of Jacksonville, but big win last night for Trevor, big win last night for Travis, big win for the Jags. There were a couple surprising results in the NFL this past weekend that we didn't get the chance to get to yesterday. One that really shocked me. Did you see the Commanders going into Los Angeles and their defense slowing down Justin Herbert to just 10 points? This was one of the more shocking results of this past weekend to me.
I had this one on in the background, was doing a lot of stuff around the house when this game was on. I think it was just, they got up to a hot start. I think Washington adjusted and just never let them do anything.
Yeah.
I think it was just good coaching adjustments by Washington, and I still think that this is a Chargers team and a staff that is still trying to figure it out. Like, they're not getting the running game the way that they want it. I know that to be for certain. I mean, you take away Herbert's 41-yard scamper there. I mean, they didn't do squat on the ground in this game.
No, Marion Hampton, 12 carries for
44
yards.
A Jim Harbaugh team who can't run the football doesn't usually bring a recipe of success.
I think they need to get Ladd McConkey the ball more. I know that they brought Keenan Allen back, but I thought that this offense last year when it was clicking and when it was at its best was when Ladd was getting the football. And I know he's getting like a similar target share this year, but his route tree has changed and his role in this offense has changed because you look at Keenan Allen, and Keenan Allen's not a guy that you want lining up on the outside anymore because of his age and the fact that he's always been more of a natural slot. Well, Ladd's more of a natural slot too. As we saw last year, he's been bumped outside a little bit more this year, and that's not really something that's his skill set, right? A lot of people are man-pressing Ladd. They're trying to jam him off the line of scrimmage, get super physical with them because of his frame. So, I don't know. There's some questions right now about this Chargers team identity-wise, and obviously, I trust that Harbaugh is going to be able to figure it out, and I think Herbert's a really good player. But at the end of the day, like, what's your identity? What's your bread and butter? What's your go-to right now is the question in Los Angeles, because if you can't run the ball with consistency, that's like cutting off the head of the snake for Harbaugh.
Well, and Texter brings up a good point. Now you have to deal with injuries. Hampton's now in the IR, so you don't have Najee Harris. You don't have Amarian Hampton. Kamani Vidal is going to have to be the lead ball carrier for this team moving forward.
Oh, man.
Start fading the Chargers.
Yeah, that might be the move. But yeah, so big time win for Jaden Daniels, coming back from injury, going on the road out to Los Angeles. They're within one game of the division all of a sudden out in the Washington Commander world. So congratulations to the Commanders for a big win this past weekend. All right, on the other side of a quick break, we have to talk about the Tennessee Titans and Arizona Cardinals. And never in a million years did I think that that sentence would be uttered out of my mouth in the big 2025. But this ending to the game and like all of the events that led up to it deserved the airtime. And if you were watching or you've caught any sort of recap on social media and or television in the last couple of days, then I know you agree at home, because what on earth, how did the Cardinals lose that football game? Quick break here on the program. We're going to talk about Amari DiMercato having one of the biggest gaffes in NFL history on the other side of a quick break.
At Tri-County Technical College, they're committed to you as they look to transform lives and build strong communities. Tri-County's academic and training programs help them stay ahead of the trends in the business and corporate worlds to ensure you'll be well-equipped to succeed on the career path you choose. From advanced manufacturing to computers and IT, healthcare to skilled trades and more, TCTC is committed to your success. To find out more, visit one of their four campuses or go online at tctc.edu.
Contractors, we know what it takes to build something great. Long days, hard work, and the right materials. At Harbin Lumber Company, we're here to make sure you've got everything you need to get the job done. Since 1917, we've been your trusted partner in building dreams, from framing lumber to finished materials. When you work with Harbin, you're not just getting quality supplies, you're getting a team that's got your back. Visit one of our local lumber yards today, and let's build dreams together.
Fall means football. Tailgates and Clemson Tigers. Make the Tiger Sports Shop your first stop before kickoff with the latest Clemson gear, from cozy fall hoodies to the latest Nike sideline gear. We've got everything you need to show your Tiger pride. Shop in store at either one of our two convenient Clemson locations, Tiger Boulevard and College Avenue, or skip the line and order online at tigersports.com. The Tiger Sports Shop, where Clemson fans make Tiger Sports Shop their game day headquarters. Everything Clemson all day, every day.
Twin Peaks is the best in the game. Here, the Scratch Kitchen delivers lunch in the clutch. I mean, where else can you order a 29-degree draft beer and a quickie combo on your lunch break? Only at Twin Peaks, the number one sports bar.
Greenville has a long mattress manufacturing history going back to 1931, when Orders Mattress Company was born. Today, the fourth generation of the Orders family is still making some of the best mattresses in the U.S. Visit Engineered Sleep's one-of-a-kind mattress showroom on Pleasantburg Drive, across from Krispy Kreme, and find your next mattress. Enjoy free in-home delivery, a 100-night sleep trial, and of course, a great night of sleep. Visit EngineersLeap.com.
Your food is best when you know where it comes from. AMPM Farms offers beef raised here in the upstate, along with 70 vendors featuring raw milk, farm and dairy products, and more. Weekly wild game and burger flights, AMPM Farms is providing your family the very best. Plan your next meal, cookout, or tailgate with AMPM Farms. 1907 Lawrence Road in Greenville, and Travelers Rest, 164 South Main, and Fountain Inn, 3085 Allen Bridge Road. Online, AMPM Farms, butchery and market.com.
Hey Clemson family, I'm Jeff Scott, former assistant coach and proud member of two national championship teams. Success on the football field takes teamwork, vision, and a great game plan. I partnered with fellow Clemson alum Eric Newton to create Newton Scott & Associates. From Tigertown to Lake Kiwi, we're your championship team, here to help you buy, sell, or build. When it's time to make your next move, trust the winning team, Newton Scott & Associates. Real estate, the Clemson way. Visit us at newtonscottsc.com.
Poor indoor air quality can significantly decrease your quality of life through experiencing sinus infections, allergies, respiratory issues, and headaches. An easy-to-install device called UV PhotoMax uses purifying blue light to zap bacteria, mold, and viruses before they enter your home's air vents. Purify the air your family breathes and help protect them from mold, bacteria, and viruses with the UV PhotoMax from Estes Heating and Air. Serving Oconee, Pickens, Greenville, and surrounding areas. Visit ESHeatingAir.com today for more information.
Two stores, one destination. Four Men on Exchange and New Teak Boutique. Whether you're looking for women's clothing and home decor items or men's fashions and gifts, we've got you covered from head to toe. New Teak Boutique is at 122 East Main Street, while Four Men on Exchange is at 102 Exchange Street, just across the street. So no matter who you're shopping for, you'll find it at New Teak Boutique and Four Men on Exchange. So come by to see us Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 5, and on Saturdays, 10 to 4. Downtown on Pendleton at New Teak Boutique and Four Men on Exchange.
You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John. Now let's get back to the show.
Welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Faxon Childress and John Hite continues here on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. Hey, folks, if you're looking to take your lawn to the next level, go with the folks at Carolina Top Dressing. Suggest you check out the website at www.carolinatopdressing.com. There, you can find more information about the best in the business here in the upstate. They're committed to serving the upstate, bringing golf course type practices to your home, including aeration, top dressing, dethatching, and soil conditioning. You can ask them about their latest top dressing amendment in Carolina Mix or sign up for any of those turf services, again, by going online to www.carolinatopdressing.com for your free quote. And as always, the folks at Carolina Top Dressing say, go Tigers. 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to check in. And John, again, never in a million years did I think we would be taking airtime, and valuable airtime at that, here on a Tuesday, to talk about the Tennessee Titans and the Arizona Cardinals. But in my entire life of watching the NFL, I don't know if I've seen a more improbable win than this, just given the situation and given the magnitude of the moment and just the sheer stupidity of how this transpired. So, again, the Titans are probably the worst team in football. They're trailing this one 21-6, and they've been dominated throughout the entire game. It looks like they're completely dead to rights. There's no level of confidence that they have any chance of coming back to this football game. They have gone 3-and-out on 3 drives in the second half thus far when the Arizona Cardinals get the ball back to start the fourth quarter up 15 points. Okay? Up 15 points. Imari DiMercato goes 72 yards up the gut on a run for a touchdown. But the play is reviewed because he dropped the ball 6 inches before the goal line. I kid you not. 72-yard touchdown, he breaks it right up the gut. There's nobody within 15 feet of him, and he does the whole, we're going to hot dog it and jog the last couple yards, and he drops it right before he enters the end zone, okay? So it goes out for a touchback. You're probably thinking at home, okay, it's still 21-6, like the Titans are dead to rights. I think that's what pretty much everybody in the country thought at this point. So the Titans get the ball back after the touchback. They go down the field. Cam Ward has a rip for 19 yards to Helm, and they end up running it up the middle for Pollard. Score, touchdown. Joey Sly misses the extra point to keep it a two-score game. So there's 10 minutes left, and the Cardinals are still up 2 scores. Well, Kyler takes a sack. They go 3-and-out and punt. The Titans drive all the way back down the field, and Cam Ward throws a terrible interception. And the ball's on the ground, and I don't even know how to describe this play, like processing it in real time. Essentially, they were playing pinball with the football down towards the end zone, and the Tennessee Titans were able to stumble into the end zone on what I can only describe as the stupidest touchdown I've ever seen in my life. John, I know you saw this past weekend. Can you help try and paint the picture or illustrate how in the world this touchdown was scored? I mean, Ward throws the pick, and then Arizona fumbles the ball. It goes on the ground. It hits like 15 different people's foot and travels 15 yards in the right direction in the end zone, and then Tennessee pounces on it and scores? Is that the best way to describe this?
I think so, because it's very I think that's the best way to describe it, man. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It's one of the worst touchdowns in the history of football. It truly.
But it was a touchdown nonetheless.
But it was a touchdown. So they get it back to 21-19. The Titans get another stop, and they go down the field and kick a game-winning field goal after a rocket from Cam Ward as time expires. So, in the fourth quarter, the Titans received the benefit of the opposing running back dropping the ball at the 6-inch line, up 15 points, that would have put them up 22 points. They turn that into a touchdown. They overcome a missed extra point that kept it a 2-score game by scoring an interception fumble return touchdown that got kicked into the end zone, and then they kick a game-winning field goal as time expires for probably the dumbest win in the history of the NFL that I loved every minute of.
To quote head coach Brian Callahan of the Tennessee Titans, things just have to go your way sometimes. We haven't had a lot of that so far this year, haven't had a lot of bounces in our favor, and sometimes you just need that.
Honestly, I think that's a really good point. I think that is a really good
point. It's an oddly shaped ball that bounces weird. We need to be reminded of that at times.
Yeah, it can bounce anywhere once it gets down there, and that's just...
Well, especially once you drop it at the goal line, too. The ball can really bounce anywhere.
I guess that is the case. So there's your Titans-Cardinals debrief, and one of the more entertaining games I've ever seen that was truly an atrocious football game that was capped off with some cinema in the fourth quarter. Other games we didn't really reference yesterday that I do want to hit while we're on the topic of the NFL, and we'll get to more college football in hour number two. The Lions took care of business against the Bengals. We talked about this yesterday. I think the Bengals are one of the worst teams in football. And I think they're down there at the bottom five. Jake Browning, yikes. The defense in general, yikes.
So, question for you. As you were the number one Lions hater coming into this season.
Yeah, they've looked good.
So I want to ask, are they good, or is this the product of playing the Bears, Ravens, Browns, and Bengals?
Yeah, I mean, they're, I guess, what, how many combined wins their opponents have? The Bengals have 2, 1, 3, +1, +2. Yeah, so, like, they've got 6 wins combined out of their 4 wins. I think they're good. I don't think it's a product of playing the schedule. I will say that I do think that it's a brutal spot. I'm not going to hold. I think they're going to lose to Kansas City on the road because Kansas City's desperate and they're in a hole right now. I'm not going to hold that against them if they lose to Kansas City.
It's on Sunday Night Football. Yeah. Give it to the Chiefs.
I'm not holding that against them if they lose to Kansas City. Like, I think you could very easily push the narrative if/when they lose of, hey, they've lost to the 2 best teams they played on their schedule. But again, one of those was in week 1 and the other one is the Chiefs in prime time with their back against the wall. Where I really think we're going to find out the identity of this football team are the 4 games after the Chiefs. You play the Buccaneers, who have had an innate ability to just win games at the end this year. They've got 4 game winning drives for their 4 wins. The Vikings, we don't know who the quarterback's going to be in that one. They've had injury issues. If they can get healthy, I think they're a live dog. Right now, nobody can overcome 4 injuries on the offensive line in the history of football. Then they're at the Commanders and they're at the Eagles. That's when I'm going to have my evaluation on this Lions team. Right now, I think they're good. Like, I'm not holding it against them that they beat up on inferior competition to date because they've looked the part. And they've dominated in a lot of these games, right? They put up 34 points on the Browns, which is the best defense in the NFL. They put up 52 points on the Bears and smacked that team around. And the Bears since have shown that they're capable of winning football games. So this line of scrimmage play is just so physical, and the running backs are so good, man. Like, Goff's life is so easy. Every quarterback is probably so envious of that guy with the way that he just has to hit his layups and hand the ball off, and there's a good chance they're going to win football games. But nah, I was skeptical of the Lions with the coordinator turnover coming into the season. I think Morton's done a good job on the offensive side of the ball. I think they've got a ways to go on defense, and that's more of a work in progress. But this looks like a playoff team. So I'm going to hold my judgment until that 4-game stretch after the Chiefs game. I think we're going to get an idea of what this football team looks like against the Buccaneers, the Vikings, the Commanders, and the Eagles, because I think there's a good chance that all 4 of those teams are in the playoff picture out in the NFC. So that's where I'm at on the Lions. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I definitely think this is a playoff team. I never really waver. I thought that, yes, there would be some decrease in production, and they would be looking a little different when you have Aaron Glenn going to New York and Ben Johnson going to Chicago. But they didn't lose a lot of personnel. If anything, I think they got better with Aiden Hutchinson being back into the fold. I think another year of Penei Sewell continuing to develop, and Jameson Williams, I think, is settling in as an NFL player now. We're not worried about gambling or those types of things. So I really like the way that they are put together. I think from the top down, this is a organization that is in unison, which has never been able to be said about Detroit. So I'm very impressed. I agree with you. I think the next couple games are going to tell us a lot here. I mean, congratulations. You've been able to beat up the 3/4 of the horrible AFC North. So you've done what you were supposed to do here. I don't hold that Packers game too much against them.
It's week one.
It's week one. You've won 4 straight. I'm not going to hold the game against the Chiefs too much against them because I think that's going to be an interesting standalone spot. You're right about the desperation in Kansas City. But I think over the course over the next month, when we get into November, I think we will really know are the Lions a true contender in the NFC or not. But I very much like the way they are put together. You say everyone's envious of Jared Goff. Well, good on Jared Goff, man, for creating a situation because there's been some bad ones that he's been tossed into as well there.
Yeah, he got thrown to the fire. What were they, 0-11 at one point in his first year there? And ever since, it's just been they've gotten better every year.
As a football society, he was left for dead during the trade.
He was. Everybody thought that they were going to completely tank out after that trade, and then the front office just went, and they're like, you know what? We're going to invest everything we've got in lines of scrimmage, and we're going to find a way to become a run-centric team, and then they've just put the pieces in place around him. And then one guy like St. Brown, you get a guy in the 4th round that turns into a wide receiver 1 in this league, and all of a sudden, the whole direction of your franchise has changed overnight. And I will say this as well. I did not like the Jahmyr Gibbs pick from a draft value position slot. That that really paid off for this team. Like, that's exactly what this team needed, to a complimentary piece next to Montgomery. I think that's part of what makes this rushing attack so effective, is the two running backs are so different that they can run almost a different playbook for both guys. Like,
And either one is fine yielding the floor to the other.
Exactly. Like, there's no selfishness in that room. Like, both guys know that they're going to get in that 15 carry range, and it is what it is. That's the best way for them to win football games. So, like, that's the main thing that's impressive to me about Detroit, is the culture. And you don't see that a lot in the NFL. So I don't like the Lions. Like, I'd pretty openly root against them. I don't like the team. I think the fan base is pretty annoying. And that's kind of the team that I've elected to hate in the NFC. But I've got an immense amount of respect for Dan Campbell and the way that he's been able to rally that locker room. It's pretty irrefutable at this point that the guy knows what he's doing, and he's a good coach too. So this is a very, very live football team. And again, they remind me a lot of Florida State. I know that kind of sounds weird, but let me walk it out. The Lions have only been in trouble the last two seasons when they have to play from behind. That's why they got in trouble last year in the playoff game. If the Lions can get the lead, you might as well just end the game and pack it up and go home. Like, you're not winning, buddy. if the Lions get up 10 points in a game, pack up your bags and go home. Get on the bus. That's how you have to beat the Lions. You have to beat the Lions how you have to beat Florida State. You have to turn Jared Goff into a drop-back passer. You have to get them out of their rhythm and out of their flow with their run game, because if you can stop the run, you can beat the Lions. If they get those backs going early, it's night-night, man. And this is a really good football team, so I'm excited to see how they can continue to grow. I think these next five games are going to be a really big test, but that's the path to beating the Lions, is you have to get them behind and you have to have a fast start. If you have a slow start against Detroit, you're dead. You're dead instantly, and you're not going to win that football game.
Are we getting a little ahead of our skis at saying Drake May is elite?
Because
last time I checked, this was a running back and kicker-led scoring affair here.
Yes. I think Drake May has played really good football for his standard this season, because I thought there was some growing pains last year. I think that he's been good, not great, and I think that he's done enough to put his team in a position to win. I think the main takeaway for me on him, he's getting better. He's getting better is the way that I would say.
Has he gotten good enough to where his alma mater will recognize him on their social media platforms?
Maybe not that far. There's some insecurity from the head ball coach up in Chapel Hill. But he definitely deserved a shout out after his performance on Sunday night. He played a heck of a game. I know he didn't throw a touchdown, but he made some big time throws down the stretch. That's a big boy win. Going into Buffalo, beating the last undefeated team on primetime, Carrie Underwood singing on Sunday Night Football, like That's peak right there for Drake May. That's the biggest win of his career, right? I mean, dating back to last season, they didn't win a ton of football games. Obviously, it was a first-year head coach under Gerard Mayo. They won three games last year with Drake May when he actually played in the game, one of which was against the Bills where he played. It was the last game of the season where the Bills rested their starters, and he was 0-for-1 in that game. So the two games that he actually won last year, it looks like, are the Jets, where he came in the middle of the game and threw six passes, and the Bears. He had one win that he had started and finished last season, and he's already tripled that quota this year. So, shout out to Drake May. I do think a lot of that's just firing Gerard Mayo and hiring Mike Vrabel. I think the football team around him is a lot better, but yeah, I'm not to the elite range yet, John. No, I'm not there, but I think he's getting better is the way that I would describe it.
It was a nice win. It was a nice win to go on the road and get that done. I was just, there were some nice throws in the game. Trying to have some fun at the Drake May stinks narrative, but there was a lot of, I didn't stay up for all four quarters of this Sunday night. It was amazing when I got up yesterday and got online, how much talk there was about, oh my goodness, New England has finally arrived. Can you believe what Drake made? Oh my goodness.
And yeah, I had some work. It was a little too,
what did he do? And then you go back and look at it and you're like, oh, I mean, it's a nice performance. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't the worst of the weekend. It wasn't the best, but like, my goodness, people are talking like he won three Lombardis over the weekend.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting dynamic to see Twitter react, and people are crowning him pretty quickly. That's the thing about the culture in the NFL. We're very quick with young quarterbacks on one end of the spectrum to like completely say that they suck and they should never play NFL football again. And then on the other end of the spectrum, it's like, this is the greatest player in the history of this sport. Like, CJ Stroud has come back down to earth because of the situation around him. And he walked into a really good situation that was a lot better than people realize. And then he had that ripped from him because the front office has not made good moves the last couple off seasons, and he looks very pedestrian. Bryce Young has been a little bit of the inverse. There's still a lot of problems there, but he walked into the worst situation imaginable, and it's slowly gotten a little bit better around him, and he started to play a little bit better as a result. I think Drake May is kind of in the middle, where he had a really bad situation last year, and now very quickly the situation has improved. So we'll walk some of that out on the other side of a quick break, and then we'll shift gears to college football at some point as well in hour number two. Stick with us here with Vax and Childress and John Hight on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. Hour number two of the program up next.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM 1560.